The following Life Matters talkback was recorded earlier. If you'd like to contribute to the discussion, please send your emails or voice memos to lifematters@abc.net.au. Look forward to hearing from you. That's lifematters@abc.net.au.
Well, early results are out for this year's NAPLAN tests, and as always, opinions are divided. Some think it's a failure. Others think it's crucial for education policy planning. And many parents and children find it stressful when it's time to sit the test. New South Wales, Queensland and Victoria are now reviewing the system. So is NAPLAN the right tool for measuring how our children's literacy and numeracy skills are progressing? Our guests today are Dr. Jenny Chesters, a quantitative sociologist and a senior lecturer at the University of Melbourne's Youth Research Centre and School of Education, and Pasi Salberg. He's Professor of Education Policy and Deputy Director at the Gonski Institute at the University of New South Wales. Jenny, Pasi, welcome to Life Matters.
Good morning.
Good morning, thank you.
Jenny, do you think that the standardised NAPLAN testing is valuable?
Not if for the purpose that it's being used for, and not in our current education system in Australia.
So what's it being used for that's problematic now?
Well, parents are using it to decide which school to send their children to. Our schools are jockeying for the highest ranking and things like that. So those aren't useful things that NAPLAN scores can be used for.
Is that a problem with the test itself, though, or just the way people handle the data?
There's also a problem with the test because it's a standardised test, so no matter what school you go to, you all sit the same test. Now, we know across Australia that schools vary quite dramatically according to the resources that they have and according to the school population. So one-size-fits-all test probably isn't very useful.
We've got a national curriculum, though. Shouldn't we be able to assess that with a national test?
We do have a national curriculum, but how it's delivered in schools can be very different. Some schools have far superior resources to other schools, and that therein lies the problem.
And Jenny, you also said that it shouldn't be used in this education system that we have now. What's wrong with our system, in a nutshell?
I don't think there's anything wrong with our system, but I think trying to test it using a standardised test is a fatally flawed concept.
And Pasi Salberg, what are your views on NAPLAN's usefulness?
I think Jenny really is to the point with this issue that the standardised test, like NAPLAN, for example, has been used for many purposes that it has never been designed to do. For example, you can never say anything about the quality of school or quality of instruction or quality of individual teacher just based on the results of the standardised test. So the use is the problem. Much more than the test itself.
So you say you're suggesting that it can be a useful test to find out how the students are progressing across Australia?
Well, in principle, if the test is good, if it's a high quality, you can do something like this. But in a country like Australia, where teachers are very well trained and prepared to also assess what are the outcomes of the schooling, much of this function that is now believed to be taken care of by NAPLAN could be done by the great teachers all around this country here.
You mentioned before it shouldn't be used to work out how well teachers are doing. Isn't it hard to tease that out, though? If you're looking at the results that students are attaining, does that not reflect on the teaching in particular schools?
Well, the psychometricians, I'm not the psychometricians, but those people who are, and they're very smart people when they're trying to figure out how to measure something like complicated things like what do we learn in a school. But what the psychometricians say about standardized tests is that the most of the factors that affect the are built into the results have nothing to do with the school. They're either individual ability of the student or they are out of school learning what the kids learn at home or elsewhere. And only small part of the thing is related to teachers or teaching or what happens in a school. So that's why the standardized tests like NAPLAN should never be used to say anything about the quality of a school or instruction taking place in a school or even the system of education.
As a side note, you and a colleague have written that successful education systems rely on continuous professionalisation of teaching. Are there good ways to work out whether we're attaining that standard of continuous professionalisation of the teaching profession?
Oh, absolutely. And understanding assessment, understanding the basic of the psychometric work behind, you know, that it takes to design the test is part of this professionalism now. Unfortunately, if we look at the teacher education programs around the world, really, there's less and less student assessment stuff there in the programs because of the prevalent standardized testing movement around the world. That means that teachers don't really need that knowledge and skills anymore because it's done by somebody else. But yeah, there are countries like Finland or now increasingly Singapore and Canada where the movement has been towards more professionalism among teachers, including their ability and responsibility to assess their students. So in this way, Australia is a little bit like outlier because all the high-performing world-class systems of education are doing things very differently to what we are doing here in Australia regarding NAPLAN.
Let's go to Nora in Sydney. Nora, you have dived into the education sector. What are your thoughts?
So NAPLAN, my thoughts on NAPLAN is that it's necessary. We do need standardized testing, but it's not being used for the intention. So what we're seeing, I suppose, on the ground as a parent, as a tutor and as a teacher is that it's manifested into a monster. So for a period of 2 years, I think it was, students were told and that they weren't allowed to do their HSC, which is their educational right, if they did not achieve a certain band in NAPLAN. I believe it was band 5.
And Nora, was this in a particular kind of school, or are you hearing these stories across the board?
This is across the board. So my students range from in primary school, well up to high school, through high school, and the level of stress was consistent.
And what would happen? Sorry, Nora, is it public and private systems?
Yes, that's correct.
Yeah.
And so what was happening is that as a tutor and the parents were teaching to the test rather than teaching concepts. And furthermore, the most disgusting thing that I saw is that students with additional needs were not given the provisions that they needed for NAPLAN. There is literature out there that reflects that students who did not were not achieving good marks were asked to stay home on the day of NAPLAN and were excused from the test so they did not bring down the school's ratings.
And these are horror stories, as you say, Nora. Thanks for giving us that perspective. Jenny Chesters, what are your thoughts on those stories that we do hear from time to time?
That's pretty much what's happening out there. I know a colleague of mine, when I was working in Canberra, was photocopying her child's NAPLAN results so that she could prove to the private school that she was trying to enrol her children in that her children should be selected. NAPLAN results should not be used to select children into private schools.
So would that be an issue with any kind of test that schools would say, we're going to have to try and get the best possible results, this is going to reflect on us, so we're going to perhaps engage in these behaviours that are not ideal, excluding students with different learning abilities and putting a huge pressure on students?
Well, they're the collateral damage, aren't they? I mean, who's really thinking about the children here? Where's the care for the children's level of self-esteem and their understanding of their own needs and their own education? I mean, this is just silly. Schools are there to support and educate children, not to compete with each other.
So I guess I'm asking, is there a test that you could do that would not have these negative impacts but would still give you an overall idea of how we're progressing across Australia?
The issue maybe if you did a NAPLAN test or something like that, but kept the results for just the education department, that might work. They do that in other countries. They don't publish the results. The children don't get their results. They use it for policy formulations, probably, but you wouldn't need to do it every year. And, a 5-yearly attempt at something like this could probably be enough.
Pasi Salberg, what are your thoughts on that idea?
Yeah, it's a great question. And, if you look at the system, if the question is how the system is performing, as you ask Hilary, what type of assessments should we have to answer the question of how the system is doing, how the whole country or the state is doing, then we know that it's equally reliable to to do a sample-based assessment, which means that we are not testing all the children all the time, but we are taking a carefully selected sample of students, and then we are running a high-quality standardized assessment or test on those kids, just like the OECD is doing with the PISA when it's measuring the countries, or some countries are assessing the educational progress. So here in Australia, I think the big issue with the NAPLAN is that it's what we call a census-based assessment, that is assessing all the children all the time, and then it happens exactly like Nora was saying, that it turns into a kind of an educational monster. And it's not only here in Australia. Donald Campbell already said in 1975, he said that any social measurement or indicator that is used for high-stake purposes will eventually get corrupted. And this is exactly what we see with NAPLAN and all the other assessments that are used for high-stake purposes. So that's why we at the Konski Institute, for example, we have been recommending to consider a sample-based NAPLAN that would take away all of these harmful, or most of the harmful things that now come with the assessment that the people have been talking about correctly here.
Just quickly, Pasi, you mentioned the PISA studies, and I know a lot of scholars, including yourself, draw on the data from those studies to make policy and advise on policy. Is there a problem with that if those kinds of testing regimes don't give us the full picture of students' capabilities?
Well, the OECD, how the OECD uses the PISA data, that is an international student assessment comparing countries, it has to be done very carefully. And the OECD is aware of this, and the governments should be aware of this. But again, you know, the same Campbell's law is now visible in some cases with the OECD PISA. It's been used, for example, to conclude the quality of entire education systems. For example, there are many people who say that Finland has the best education system in the world only using the data from the OECD PISA that is measuring literacy, numeracy, and scientific knowledge of 15-year-olds. And we can never say anything about the quality of entire system like this. So we need to be careful here, and we need to kind of defend these well-meaning monitoring and assessment systems from getting corrupted.
You're hearing this morning from Pasi Salberg, Professor of Education Policy at the University of New South Wales, and Dr. Jenny Chesters, Quantitative Sociologist and Lecturer at the University of Melbourne. Catherine joins us from Victoria. And Catherine, your son had a very interesting experience. Tell us about that.
Well, actually, we saved our son from the experience. He it was in the relatively early days of NAPLAN, and he was very excited to be going off to do a competitive test because he's quite a competitive person. We got the he felt happy about his performance, and we got the results back, and I was shocked to see that he hadn't performed very highly on the graded system. There was in one section there was a grid on each page, and the dot was where your child fell within that grid, and we couldn't find the dot, and then we found that it was outside the grid on the lower side. So he kept begging to see his form, but luckily I opened the form and checked it first. And so I ended up losing it, because I just thought, if this boy at this age finds that he's off the grid for this dubious test, it will affect him forever, his self-esteem forever. So I never showed it to him, and he never knew.
Wasn't he wondering why, what was going on? Didn't he suspect?
Yes, well, look, being a young boy, he was passionately interested for a while. All his friends were getting their results and, you know, comparing with each other how they had gone. And I just said, oh, yes, it must be in the mail, or I just fobbed him off. And eventually, you know, the interest in the whole thing died down, and we just left it at that.
And where is he now, Catherine?
He's about to finish law.
Good on him. Thanks very much for that story, Catherine. Let's go to Floyd in Melbourne. Floyd, how did your son go with NAPLAN at primary school?
Well, look, I honestly can't remember the results, but the experience was pretty negative, because it took about a week of the school faffing around preparing for the test. The preparation stuff was nothing to do with what he'd been studying. And he found the test annoyingly easy and trivial. So from my point of view, this was when he was in primary school. From my point of view, it was just a sort of massive waste of resources.
And so this is in primary school. Do you feel like it had an ongoing impact on his education if he used that time at that particular point?
No, I mean, Look, he's turned out all right. You know, so I mean, education's pretty flexible. You could take a week out of anyone's educational life. You know, at a lot of stages of school, without sort of having a massive negative impact on them. But you know, so he's fine. Just overall, the whole thing wasn't very positive, and I really felt for the teachers. There was obviously a lot of stress around the school about preparing for it.
Mm. Thanks very much for that, Floyd.
Thanks.
Off to Brisbane now, and Natalie. Natalie, what happened when your children went through the testing?
My children actually did okay through the testing, but my problem is that I don't like the fact that we get the results because it gets discussed in the playground. And as a parent, you don't, you know, when you get a normal report card, you can sit down with your child and discuss what the issue was, but it sort of is out of control in the playground because, you know, my daughter did okay, but a couple of her friends didn't, and there was discussions like, oh, such and such is dumb or such and such is below par. And I just think, do we as parents really need those results when we've got the report card from the teacher who's got a more intimate connection with your child?
And it's really hard to combat that kind of stuff as a parent, isn't it, if it's so prevalent in the school space?
It is, and I find it fascinating that my eldest daughter went through the system and got caught up in all the stress of it, and so she performed badly in terms of NAPLAN, yet her report card was totally the opposite, and she performed well. So there's that factor as well, where because the schools do NAPLAN rehearsals sometimes, some teachers get anxious about it, some don't, but it affects the child's performance.
Thanks very much for that important view, Natalie. We're chatting today with Pasi Sahlberg, Professor of Education Policy at the University of New South Wales, and Dr. Jenny Chesters, Quantitative Sociologist and Lecturer at the University of Melbourne. Jenny, you've worked on some research which looked at how the educational background of parents affected a child's NAPLAN scores. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, so I looked at NAPLAN scores for children attending government schools in Canberra, and I also looked at PISA scores, so across Australia, of one cohort of 15-year-olds, and in both sets of data I found a very, very strong correlation between parents' education and child's performance on the standardised test. And then I looked at the average socioeducational advantage of each school and found, again, a very strong correlation between level of advantage in the school population and child standardised test score. So the question is, what is a standardised test actually testing when you look at measures across Australia?
So are you saying that the test is inherently biased if it can't allow for those differences in socioeconomic background?
Well, because we're giving the same test to children regardless of which school they're going to, schools have different levels of resources, and we don't seem to be able to compensate for that at the moment. We've been trying to do it for decades and we aren't really succeeding. What we need is an understanding that the children from disadvantaged backgrounds are going to be disadvantaged in our education system. And rather than keep testing them and finding out the same answer every year, maybe we should redirect some resources to supplying more resources to the schools that need them.
Let's go to Michelle in Victoria, because I think she touches on some of the things that you've been saying, Jenny. Michelle, welcome to you.
I was lucky enough to be in the Northern Territory in a remote community when NAPLAN was rolled out. Some of these communities, and this one in particular, English is their fourth language. So this was totally irrelevant to these people and to the children, made them really anxious. The questions are convoluted. They weren't allowed to have an interpreter. So they had to do all of this in a really difficult way. It was just totally irrelevant. And how does this data reflect on this school with hardworking teachers, etc., doing great work, but not in language?
And Michelle, did you find that the results had an impact on morale at the school?
I wasn't there for the results to come back, but I was there for the rollout of it. But the morale of the school was really down when this was rolled out. Some of the kids stayed away. They were so concerned that they would fail And inevitably they would, because the questions were so difficult in English, that to translate that into how they're trying to comprehend the question made their answers incorrect. So how does this reflect? This is just one little school in the Northern Territory, let alone our very our schools right through Australia that are full of people who come from other countries whose English is not their first language.
That's a really important point, Michelle. Thank you. Parsi Salberg, I was reading with interest that when you were asked about the Australian education system, your first comment is, we have one of the best education systems anywhere, world class, but then you pause and say, but only for some children. What needs to be done about that?
I think here we need to really focus more on equity and equality. That's from the distance, if we look at the Australian education system, that's the challenge and problem number one, that we really do have world-class schools and education for many of our children, but not all of them. And that's why what Jenny was talking speaking earlier about, the redirecting resources and funding to the things that really would make a difference and help those schools and disadvantaged communities is absolutely critically important. Just consider this, that NAPLAN is now, it's a 10-year-old national assessment, and it has cost this country and taxpayers at least $1 billion. It's about $100 million exercise annually. And I'm not saying that this all the money should be taken away and spent something else. And money is not always the solution. But this country, we can do much cheaper and better the same thing that we are doing now through NAPLAN and spend the money that is left over to help those schools and communities who really need it. And you know, Jenny's analysis is exactly to the point that if the standardized assessment like NAPLAN or in any other country accurately measures anything, it is the socioeconomic background of the children's parents, in other words, their occupation and education.
So Parsi, what are some examples that you've seen in Finland of how kids are encouraged to actually engage in learning, to be excited by learning rather than to learn to a test?
You know, I hate to use Finland always as an example because I've been traveling and living around the world. But of course, you know, Finland is one of those examples. But many other countries now are doing the same thing. You know, one of the ways to empower and engage children more into schooling is to ask them more often what they really are interested in learning and how they want to learn these things. And this is what many countries, including Australia, is doing increasingly now, that we involve students in planning and thinking about what is important to learn in a school. But the other one that gets closer to the conversation here is that we can engage and involve our students much more into the analysis and evaluation of what we are learning in the school. Often the children themselves are the best one to tell us what they have learned, whether this what they have learned in school is meaningful and important for them. I'm not saying that this should be the only information and evidence of what the school system is doing, but we can do much better than this, and we can have a much more active system and more productive schools when we engage children and teachers more into thinking about how do we learn and what have we learned and what does it mean for us.
There's also been a push towards broader cross-disciplinary teaching, so looking at broader categories and using drawing in different strands to a particular lesson rather than going saying this is just maths, this is just English. Would that be useful here, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, if you look at, in this case, again, Finland, that I know the best here, the Finland is doing much more kind of a strong movement towards integrating subjects and away from, you know, teaching disciplines. And if you ask a question that why this is happening, you know, the biggest reason for this is, again, children's and young people's views. Many of the teenagers, for example, in Finland are saying that they find schooling boring or irrelevant for them. They often refer to things like studying, you know, sitting in a subject class that has nothing to do with the real life. And there are studies here in Australia saying the same thing, that young Australians in the school, that they find less and less meaningful studying a kind of a narrow subject without any relevance or connection to the real life. So if we listen to the kids, what they want to do, they would likely to say that we want to study more, not only always, but more things that are closer to the real life.
Jenny, our Australian curriculum is along a quite a complicated three-dimensional model. So there are learning areas like maths and English, but also general capabilities like literacy and numeracy, which cut across those learning areas. And then also cross-curriculum priorities, which I think are meant to filter down through all the other bits, like sustainability and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander histories and cultures. Does this model give schools the flexibility to do the kind of broader and cross-disciplinary teaching that Tapasi mentioned?
Probably. The thing they have to remember, though, is that teacher training happens at a particular point in the person's career. And unless they come back and do follow-up training through maybe a grad cert or a master's, they're teaching in a way that they were taught 20 or 30 years ago. So curriculum changes take a long time to filter through. The other thing for me is, I mean, I'm a mother with three grown-up daughters now, and two of them are dyslexic, so they wouldn't have done very well in a NAPLAN test. All of them have very good careers. The thing is that at home we worked on inspiring them to learn and to stay engaged at school. And I think that is the key. So whether, as Parsi said, we do projects that cut across different skill sets and courses, or whether it's a topic they're really interested in, that's great. But the key is keep them inspired and engaged with learning.
Let's take a quick call from David in regional Victoria before we go. David, what's your view on NAPLAN?
The perspective of being an ex-school council president in a regional Victorian school, primary. And yes, the challenge of NAPLAN is the stigma that's been attached to the results for children, both high and low, and the fact that it has become a de facto measure of the school, which I remember, I mentioned this because I remember a situation where our NAPLAN results came in, they were down, and after much debate and what should we do and what went wrong, our principal simply said, look, I have to admit it, and people don't want to hear it in the PC world, but this year's bunch of kids in that year aren't that bright. They're not as bright as the kids from the previous testing, therefore we've gone down. Now, this is a higher socioeconomic school, so there was no changes. It measured those kids at the time. So if you take away announcing those results, when those results come out, everyone said, what did we do wrong? We did nothing wrong. Nothing had changed. But it gave us a measure that those children needed extra attention than perhaps a year or two ahead that were doing better.
So, David, do you think that perhaps schools need better information and guidance on how to use the results?
Schools don't. The problem is that they're put out and people look at them and go, gee, why did you go down? And no one wants to, it's very hard to stand there in front and say, well, this year's, you know, that last year's free last 2 years ago or year before wasn't as good as, was better than the year ahead. There's that stigma you don't want. I agree with the comments that if the results were provided and they're provided to the teacher only, the teacher often knows what the children are struggling with. It gives them another measure they can use, but not to the students. So then they can't say, how did you go? My son did middle and incredibly high on most of his results, but he still felt concerns about his middle results that they weren't good enough. And that was wrong. He's always struggled in that subject, and as we said, he's going to go on and be successful, I believe, and it won't make any difference. He just doesn't do well in that subject.
And David, it's really good to hear from you on that point. Thank you. Just quickly, Parsi Salberg, your thoughts on what David had to say. Does there need to be some really strong guidance on to schools about how they use these results for their planning?
Sure. You know, we have research in our university that shows that schools really do not always understand all the details of the statistics and data that comes with the NAPLAN results. So this is a very complicated issue. I would rather talk about real alternatives now, what type of things would replace this current NAPLAN, because it has to be replaced. We cannot continue, we should not continue like this. And so if we had a sample-based national assessment here that would take away this burden from schools to look at their own results and try to make sense out of those. And I don't believe that even, you know, trying to keep this information in secret in the departments of education in some way. It doesn't work. You know, Australia, like most democracies, have the laws that make public information available for everybody. So this information would leak and be available in the media and front pages of the news. So I would rather look for a alternative solution that would remove all these questions that we are talking about now and replace this with a conversation that how and what schools and students, the teachers should be really assessing about the learning and what the schools are doing and how to communicate those things with the parents and others rather than and try to figure out what to do with this current NAPLAN. It's going to be so complicated anyway that whatever we do with the current situation is probably never going to lead to the point where we could say that everything's fine.
Well, I'm glad we could be part of the preliminary stages of that conversation. Parsi, Jenny, thanks for joining us on Life Matters today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Hilary.
Dr. Jenny Chester is a quantitative sociologist and senior lecturer at the University of Melbourne's Youth Research Centre and School of Education, and Parsi Salberg, Professor of Education Policy and Deputy Director at the Gonski Institute at the University of New South Wales.